Vice Chair Gosselin.
I'm here.
Director Miller.
Here.
Director Wilkin. Director Wall.
Here.
Director Kelly.
Here.
Director Wilbert.
Here.
You have quorum.
All right, so now I will ask for an approval of the agenda and the consent agenda.
So moved.
And moved.
Second.
And seconded. Without objection, we have approval of the consent agenda. Public comments. Anybody in the audience would like to make a public comment? Anybody online? Okay, hearing none. We'll move on to new business, which is election of officers. You have in your packet, prepared by the staff, an election of officers outline. So we'll just follow that. So do I hear any nominations for presiding officer?
Is that President of the Board? Is that
yes,
the presiding officer?
President,
I nominate Jim Dodson for that position.
Okay, any others? Okay. Let's move on to Vice Chair, and I would like to nominate Jack Wilbur. Any others? Okay. I think then we will close the nominations, and can I get do I need to separate them, or
you can do them together?
Okay, so those in favor, so I have been, Jim Dodson has been nominated for chair, and Jack as vice chair. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Okay. Without objection, I will serve as chair, and Jack will serve as vice chair. Now, let's see. I think Elena wants to get some of the appointment work out of the way. So, Jack, I'm asking you to continue to serve as chairman of the Finance Committee.
I accept that.
Okay. And I would like you to continue to serve on the Finance Committee. Is that okay?
If Derek Miller would like to take that position.
Well, I was going to step off and let Derek serve in my place, if that works for you.
Okay.
Thank you, Sheena. Derek, I'd like to appoint you to the Finance Committee. Okay. And I don't see Dave online.
He doesn't typically attend these meetings.
Okay. Well, at least temporarily, I will appoint Dave, and I'll talk to him. So then we have a full Finance Committee.
That's it.
Okay. So we have secured a new slate, and we will move on to the comparative financial statement and audit report. Is that you?
That's me. Hey, Brian.
There we go.
All right, I'd like to introduce Brian Kuplik. He is the principal with Altman Rogers. He's the main auditor. Don't usually see too much of him until the very end, but he is going to be going over the audit. So just as a reminder, the audit is finalized. It's their opinion. So suggested changes can be made, but they probably will not be made. So it's more just a report that Brian will be making to the board. We've got first the letter to the governing board, which is this group, and then we also have the comparative financial statements he'll briefly go over. If there's any questions related to the financial statements, they should be directed to management. Brian, with that, it's all yours.
Okay, great. Thanks for the introduction. So, yeah, my name is Brian Kuplik. I'm an audit principal here at Altman Rogers. Before I talk about the financial statements themselves, I'll talk about the audit process and kind of what we do as part of the audit. My whole thing will be pretty brief, so if there are any questions, by all means, just holler out at me and get my attention and ask as I'm going, and I'll have some time for questions at the end, too. And if you want me to go into more detail on anything, I'm happy to, but generally speaking, I'm going to do a real surface level, 30,000-foot kind of results of the audit kind of presentation, so just let me know if you want me to drill down into anything more specifically. So as part of the audit, this was a little bit different year for IGU because this audit year you were subject to the federal single audit as well. Anytime an entity has over $750,000 in federal expenditures in a given year, they were actually required to have what's called a federal single audit. That threshold is actually a million going forward, but it was 750 for this particular year. So that's a whole separate audit opinion that's incorporated within this report. So we still do a regular financial statement audit, which is right in line with everything we've done in previous years. But in addition, there's a second opinion that we issue over the entity's compliance with its major federal programs. And so I'll touch on that opinion as well. That opinion's in the back, and the audit procedures that we do over that are different than the ones that we do over our financial statement audit. So for our financial statement audit, we're doing the same kind of things that we did in prior years. So we're testing the internal controls of the organization. we're reviewing the cash disbursement system, payroll system, any kind of billing systems, cash receiving systems. We're establishing a materiality threshold. We're looking at every transaction over that material amount, all of that so that we can reduce the amount of substantive work we have to do. So if we can test internal controls, we don't find any errors in those internal controls, then we can basically rely on them as part of our audit procedures, and it kind of reduces the amount of like other work that we have to do. So in addition to that, we also go down the balance sheet of the organization, which is the assets and liabilities. All material asset and liability accounts get tied out to some kind of supporting documentation. So just as an example, like for the cash balances, we're going to make sure that those agree or reconcile to the bank statements from the financial institutions that we would confirm directly with them and things like that. So, you know, if there's questions on what kind of procedures we as auditors might do over like a specific account balance or transaction type, I'm always happy to answer those. For our federal compliance procedures, that's a little bit less, we have less flexibility in what we do. Essentially, the federal government, so in this case, the grant that was considered a major program was the EPA grant. EPA and all federal agencies release like kind of the requirements of each of these programs, and they basically give us a list of these are the areas that we want you to test. And then we simply test those areas. So the areas, you know, typically are things like allowable costs, you know, what was the grant spent on, what it was supposed to be spent on, reporting, procurement, eligibility sometimes if there's a grant that has eligible recipients and things like that. So, you know, there's not a lot of thinking that we have to do as auditors related to this. We simply get the requirements from the federal, you know, the federal compliance supplements, and then we just test the entity's controls and processes to make sure that they're in compliance with that federal major program. So that's kind of the steps that we take over those. So Moving into the reports themselves, if you look at page, I'm assuming it's probably page one of the financial statements. Page one. This is the auditor's opinion. So this is the part of the audit that the auditors actually put onto the financial statements. So this was prepared by the auditors. And essentially what this opinion is, this is an unmodified opinion, which is the best type of opinion that auditors are allowed to give. This opinion relates to the financial statement audit, not the compliance. This opinion says that in our opinion as your auditors, the following financial statements are materially correct. So that's as good as you get in the audit world from an audit opinion. You know, there's lots of different types that you can get that, you know, all go worse in severity, but this is the best type of opinion. Now, it doesn't mean necessarily that there weren't adjusting journal entries or audit findings or any issues or errors, but what it does mean is that if there were any issues or adjustments, those were all made before the financial statements were presented, and that the financial statements as presented here are materially correct in the opinion of the auditor. So that's all well and good, but typically what people want to hear about is, okay, well, what were there any findings? Were there any adjusting journal entries? Were there any issues? The meat of the audit, the more interesting stuff. And where you go to find that information from this audit report is that if you go to the back, starting on basically page 32 of the audit report or of the document, this is the opinion over federal compliance, which is also an unmodified opinion. But then the following page after that, starting on page 35. Is the kind of a quick summary of the results of the audit. So we did not have any audit findings related to either the financial statement audit or the compliance audit, which is great. One thing I do want to emphasize related to specifically the compliance portion of the audit is that the threshold to get a compliance finding is quite low. It's very easy to get compliance findings. And the reason for that, or one of the main reasons for that, is that compliance findings can't be fixed after the fact, whereas like financial statement issues, a lot of times you can catch those and fix them, but compliance is often a pass-fail type test, where it's, was this report submitted on time? No, it was one day late. That's a non-compliance, right? Because the compliance test was, this has to be submitted by this date, so we do our test. If a report was late, you'd get a compliance finding. If there was a systematic issue of late reporting, you get a qualified opinion over compliance. So it speaks really highly to an entity's controls and the job that they're doing over compliance specifically, but even the financial statements as well, to have no findings. So there were no findings, like I said, over the financial statements or compliance, which is really great, especially with an entity that's doing its first. Well, first is in my history, maybe years ago, there was a federal single audit. But first in my history with the organization having a federal single audit. So to kind of hit the ground running, you know, with all everything blazing is really unusual. Typically, if an entity is having its first federal compliance audit, I usually have lots of findings. So it's refreshing and speaks really highly to the job that management's doing to not have any findings related to federal compliance in this, especially in this initial year. So, so like I said, on page 35, you can see the kind of the summary results of the audit, where we say we had no findings. We list the major program that was audited as part of compliance. And that's just kind of what you could use as like kind of your summary of the, in fact, you know, section one, you can see a summary of auditor's results. So, that's where I would go, when looking at this entity to see, you know, whether there are any findings. On the letter to the governing board, we did have one adjusting journal entry that we posted. So, and that's just related to recognizing some grant revenue. That's not all that uncommon. We're required to communicate all adjusting journal entries that we propose to management. Management made this entry. It got made. It's not a finding. It's not something that we consider a weakness or a discrepancy in their internal control processes, but it was a journal entry that needed to get posted. So, I like to call those out because people are kind of curious about them, but I wouldn't read too much into it. So, so that's kind of my whirlwind presentation. I'm happy to answer any questions that anyone might have.
Okay, questions? Jack?
So you talked about the federal, doing the federal audit with the dollar threshold of $750,000 was changing in the future. What's it changing to?
It changed to $1 million.
$1 million. And we, at $1 million, we still would have had to do the audit?
Yeah. So okay. If you look at on page of the audit, on page 28 of the document itself, not the PDF, but the actual page 28, this is your schedule of federal expenditures for the fiscal year. This is a required schedule. Anytime an entity is subject to the federal single audit, this is a required schedule along with that. That basically lists the amount expended during the year. So ITU's total expenditures, federal expenditures during 6/30 for the year ended 6/30/2025 was $2,193,470. So yeah, the entity would have been subject to the federal single audit even at the $1 million threshold.
Thank you.
And this is a per year basis. So if 1 year your current year expenditures drop below $1 million, you would not be subject to the federal single audit. If the following year they jump back up over $1 million, you would again be subject to the federal single audit. So it's because looking at the grant, it looks like you got there's roughly two million left out of that $4 million EPA grant. So management will tell me whether they think they're going to spend that and what the timeline is and whether they're going to be subject to it for FY 2026. But that'll certainly be something we look at next year to make sure that, the entity is in compliance and is having a federal single audit done if one is indeed required.
Thank you.
Other questions? Sherry.
Yes, on the checklist on page 35, thank you, Brian, for your presentation. The very last item, if you could clarify that for me, audit qualifies as low risk auditee, and you say no.
Yeah, so this is I get this question a lot. So one of the requirements to be qualified as a low risk auditee is you have to have two consecutive years of clean federal single audits. So because IGU was not subject to a federal single audit in 2024, they are automatically going to be a high-risk auditee under the uniform guidance. So it's simply just a pass-fail that doesn't say anything about the entity itself. It just says you didn't have a single audit last year because you weren't required to.
Thank you.
Other questions? Jack?
So this is more of a management, but the auditor. Did you find that you had to do something special other than treating it as kind of a separate project into as far as your accounting procedures go to demonstrate compliance with the federal part of this audit?
Not more. It requires more work, but the same procedures are still in place that we apply to the financial statements.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay. Zach, I'm going to turn it back to you to see if you want to go anywhere from here.
Brian, I just want to tell you thank you again. Your group is always outstanding as usual. Same, Ivan's the lead auditor. She does a fantastic job, so appreciate you guys.
Okay, and Brian from the ward, you know, thank you, and also Zach, you know, thank you for a great job as usual.
All right, that's all I got. I'm ready to be done with this one. Thanks again, Brian.
Okay, great. Thank you. Bye.
We will be subject to a single audit next year.
You think you will?
Without a doubt. I want this argument to keep on going with it.
If you're okay, keep going.
Yeah.
I get distracted all the time.
Zach, are you?
I'm done, yes,
oh,
sir.
You're done, okay. We have the general manager's report.
I think maybe operations report first.
Okay. Operations report. I skipped right over you and went right to Zach.
That's okay. I'm really glad to remain silent.
Take the microphone away from George.
Where did he come from?
All right. So as far as plotting and planning for the 2026 construction season, we've received our approvals from the ADC for the installation areas under the targeted airshed grant. So we're putting together permit applications for the Woodsmoke subdivision in North Pole to extend as much as we can out there with the remainder of those targeted airshed funds. All of the inventory has been reconciled, and we're making sure that any of the longer lead items have been ordered and are on the way. We had substantial directional drill repairs that are needed from the season. I touched on that in my previous report, but all those parts are on order and on the way. We were also able to confirm that the grant would pay for the repairs to that equipment. So it was very helpful in that front. Cost estimates are being prepared for new 2026 installs, and we're still sitting fairly low at the 38 service line applications. Most of those have been site surveyed and are ready to go. But Chris has been doing a good job pulling together all the planning and preparing training materials for the next season and making sure we're primed and ready to go. On the operations front, as you can imagine, this cold snap has left them running around all over the place, making sure that we've got people taken care of. We had no lost time injuries, no vehicle accidents. 10 turn-ons this month. The slowdown on that's been very much appreciated so that we could focus on keeping everything flowing. We did do our annual liaison training with local law enforcement. It's part of our 193 requirements for the storage sites. So we brought in University Fire Department, Alaska Troopers, North Pole responders, and did annual training on that front. A substantial project was completed in the North Pole facility, bringing back the second storage tank online and completing the pressure controls that were needed out there. Jeremiah did a great job designing those, and we've been seeing consistent and solid delivery pressures on the North Pole system. Glad to see it. We started utilizing the second 12-inch header running out of Site 3 to provide the Fairbanks system, and we've been seeing a lot better town-wide pressures. I was checking before this meeting, and we're seeing 37 on one side, 35 on the other, even with the peak demand that's going on right now. And that's with UAF and the hospital online at the moment. And then we've been working on refining and loading procedures out of the large tank.
George, why is the hospital online? Usually they kind of seek out their lowest cost.
I have not followed up to why they have. I figured it was kind of a gift horse for the utility. I won't look it in the mouth.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Yeah. We've been working on refining procedures for loading trailers out of Site 3. This is something that's required just due to the shift in the LNG source, that we need to be able to load trailers for Talkeetna rather than being able to bring them up out of our supply out of Point McKenzie. So that's been going very well, just working on refining the process. On the Titan front, once we went exclusively to the North Slope, production out of there stopped on December 1. Some of the operators were able to take some well-deserved PTO for a little while, but they're working on kind of mothballing and preparing that for a more prolonged shutdown down that way, doing a lot of cleanup and maintenance that they haven't had time to do. So I don't think that facility has been able to shut down at least as long as I've worked for the utility. So it's got some wear and tear to be worked on. On the PHMSA and regulatory front, we did receive notice that our audits for this season are going to be the North Pole and the Fairbanks distribution systems. So Jeremiah and I have started compiling all the responses and procedures for those question sets. I'm still waiting on a scheduled date for it. And on the harvest front, there's been a lot of back and forth on trying to make this transition between IGU, Middle Fork, and Harvest. They've been incredibly forthcoming and helpful on their side, trying to make sure that we're getting all the information and assistance that we need. We've been working a lot with them on their loading procedures, giving them some of the insight into our trailers and the LNG process that they weren't as familiar with, to where we've been able to cut the loading times down by over 100%. So it's been a good collaboration to pull that all together. And other than that, that's what I've got for you.
Cool. Questions for George? George.
Was the PHMSA inspection, was that expected, or is that a surprise? Or?
Absolutely. We have a number of different systems that we're registered for them for. There's each of the storage sites, as well as the two distribution systems and Titan. In theory, they get audited once every 4 years, depending on the facility. So I harassed them at the end of November, trying to get everything scheduled so that we could be prepared and ready to go.
And then, forgive my ignorance, new member, just trying to make sure I understand terminology and everything, but when we say 38 service line applications, is that fair to equivalent? Is that a new customer? Is that 38 new customers?
Yes, sir.
And then same thing with 10 turn-ons this reporting period, is that 10 new customers?
That would be turning on service lines that were installed this previous construction season.
Okay. Sorry, and then final question. I don't know if Tank B, Site 4, Site 3, if that's worth like getting a tour, but I'd be interested in just getting familiar with.
I'll be glad to take you around.
Yeah.
For the breakdown of the sites, Site 1 is one of the original ones south of Van Horn off of Donald Road. And then you've got Site 3, which is our large 5 million gallon tank. And then Site 4 is the North Pole facility. And anytime you'd like to go on a tour, I'll be glad to run you around.
Thank you.
Okay. Other questions? Okay. Thank you, George. Yeah, and tell the crew, great job. You know, this weather, everybody was having trouble, and you guys zoomed through it.
They have done amazing this period, and I could not be prouder of the team that we built. So.
Cool. Jack?
So what kind of issues do you run into in cold weather?
Let me see the.
How much time?
Well, with the gas. I mean, you know, with fuel oil, you can get congealed fuel. You can, boilers, fail and stuff like that.
Most
it
of
seems like gas, just kind of flows, basically.
Most of the issues we run into are on the liquefaction side, to where when you start getting the extreme cold temperatures, you have contracting of mated flanges, things like that, that will start to develop leaks. You have a lot of folks on the distribution side who are concerned about odd smells they may have, things of that nature, so you're getting a lot more call-outs to investigate things.
Mm-hmm.
We have not had a lot of supply issues or anything else.
Mm-hmm.
It's been mostly trying to keep up with making sure customers are taken care of.
Mm-hmm.
And then also with the increased send-out, it's a balancing act with the vaporization systems,
mm-hmm.
namely making sure that we can get enough hot glycol to everything to do the output that we need.
Mm-hmm.
George, about how many trailers have we had over the road?
222
from the North Slope,
and no problems.
Oh, we had problems.
Oh, but no, and no, in the ditch or
no,
none of that.
No. Our biggest issue we've had is freezing airlines. And we worked that through between Harvest, Metal Fork, and us to where, by not disconnecting from trailers, we've had a lot less issues on that front.
So.
Pete? And the trailers, they're working out great? The new additions to them?
Yeah, they've been doing well.
Cool. Okay, well, thank you again, George.
Of course.
And now, say that again.
Finance needs a report, please.
Jack, you want to make a report?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
That's typically what happens. Glad to do it. So, let's see. So the finance report starts on page 60 of the packet.
Did you say page 60?
Yep. Packet page 60. Don't get confused with the audit pages. It's the page 60 of 79. So first, I just want to bring into your attention towards the top there, where we're talking about cash on hand, marketable securities. And it says that the cash on hand was slightly over budget, marketable securities was under budget, and that we have a current credit of $1.9 million, which isn't included in either of those numbers. And so if we take the cash on hand and the marketable security budget and add into it the credit that we have from Middle Fork, which would essentially be in the cash in hand or in the marketable securities if it wasn't a credit, we end up with a total of $7.1 million against a budget at this time of $5.3 million. So in reality, we're quite a bit ahead of the budget. Yeah, same numbers I did?
Yep. Okay. I took me a sense like 7 miles. That's a big number. We're sure. Yeah. I'd, yeah. So, okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, we're, from that standpoint, real good. And, Derek, what the credit means is that when Middle Fork was still driving from Titan to here, that is a cheaper route than the North Slope was. And they were expecting to earn revenue based on driving back and forth to the North Slope rather than to Titan and back. And so what we were doing is paying them their trips between Titan and Fairbanks the same as they would have been paid if they were driving to the North Slope, with the idea that then that we would get credit back as we continued on with the North Slope truck. So it was we were solving a cash flow issue for them rather than actually, you know, giving them any extra money or anything like that. So that's where the credit is mounted to, and we're I think we're chewing it down at the same rate that we gained it, right, per truck?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Next, I want to, I think that's all I had on that there. Didn't really have anything else on the report itself. Going to page 67, which is what we call the dashboard. A couple of things there is that looking at the, and this is nothing new, but it was just something that that kind of dawned on me to take a look at, was under operating income loss in parentheses in bold down there. You can see these are negative in both respects, but and right now they are still negative if you don't count depreciation and amortization, but they're a lot better. You know, it's, in other words, if you don't count depreciation and amortization, then the operating loss is really about $270,000 a year to date, but over $400,000 actual versus a budget of over $400,000 a year to date, which indicates that we're doing a lot better than we were expecting. So when you see, anyway, putting it in perspective a little bit, and we chatted about that at the meeting, and you were there when mm-hmm. we chatted about that, right? So that the so for the rest of the board, this is primarily because we're in that part of our fiscal year where demand is low, and is expected to be corrected, and I suspect it's been corrected by now with all the gas we've been selling lately. But you can see that also by going back to, I think it's page 34, which is in the audit report. Page 14 of the audit report, you can see the same thing. There, the operating loss for the year was $3.4 million. But if you take out depreciation and amortization, which is over $6 million, we end up with an operating gain of $2,640,000. So the way that's reporting, and I'm not arguing with the way it's reporting, but it just kind of, doesn't, in my mind, doesn't reflect a true thing about, how we're really doing. So,
just one point. So whenever we're determining rates for the fiscal year and we go through the budget process, we generally exclude depreciation and amortization on rates, as we don't try to collect what we would expense out for depreciation. If we did so, our rates would be astronomical.
Okay, and so back to the dashboard on page 67. One thing that you can see is that in the two pie chart areas there, that our actual year-to-date cost per MCF is $24.66, which is slightly higher, 22 cents higher than our budget. And I point that out because it's unusual. That our actual is below the budget, but it's going over the budget a little bit now. I suspect that also for this next month that will turn around with the amount of gas that we've been selling. It's just that this reflects a very lower than expected consumption in the first three, four, July, August, October, November, part of the year. One thing on this, also I think that's worth talking about, is that transportation costs are way up from where we expected them to be, and at 50.1%, and what I observed was last month it was only 17.7%, and in the meeting Zach had a real good explanation for that. What was that?
Off the top of my head, we started expensing this month the transportation costs for Middle Fork that were elevated for their cash flow situation. So you're seeing a higher cost in transportation than what the budget anticipated.
But it will even out before the end of the fiscal year.
That's correct.
Because of the credit thing?
Yeah, okay. It'll level out.
Okay.
Was that the answer I gave you?
Right.
Sounds good.
Cool.
I don't remember, but okay. That's why I didn't write anything down. That's why I was going to. And then on the next page, when we look at those pie charts, you can see a similar thing, that our projected cost for MCS at the end of this fiscal year is very slightly 6 cents higher than the budget was, and I suspect that that'll be corrected this year too. I mean, this next period also, next month. That's my report.
Thank you, Jack. Any questions of Jack? Okay, hearing none, I've been trying to pass the gavel to Elena for a long time. She won't take it, but maybe she'll take it.
I'll take it this time. You have my written report here. I will not bore you with rereading it. I will talk about a couple of related but not specifically included in my report thing. So first, we had our record send out this year. It was 138,000 gallons of LNG. For previous to this winter, we had a record of 121,000 gallons in February of 2024. But more importantly than that, and as we talk about the logistics of managing a gas distribution in the winter, I think this next statistic is more relevant. So before this winter, we had the most number of days that we had more than 100,000 gallons of LNG distributed was 11 days, and that was again in fiscal year 2024. So far this winter, we're at 27 days of above 100,000 gallons that's distributed. To put that just a little bit in perspective, when our Titan liquefaction facility goes up all the way, it sometimes could produce 50,000 gallons a day. So we would not have been able to do this had the harvest plant not been started, and we're already seeing the benefits of our combined benefits of significant additional liquefaction capacity, a lot more trailers to be able to transport those volumes, and our storage facility that is working as it should, because even with the harvest facility, now the limitator is going to become the trailers and the available drivers to pull them, and the fact that trailers will need to go under maintenance. We've been doing at most about 84,000 gallons per day, so the storage is helping with the send out.
Would it be possible to pull up a current version of the chart that shows the what's stored and predicted versus the 20 day?
Yes.
Current.
She knew you were going to ask that.
I asked Zach to. In Romanian, we have a saying: before you show something to somebody, you have to put lipstick on. So I asked Zach to put lipstick on his morning report, and the morning report has lipstick on now.
Nope.
That is not it. I'm sorry.
That's right there. You just have it. Go to the second one. There you go.
So I was going to get to this here in a minute, but the harvest facility had some unexpected downtime for maintenance purposes. It was about 4 days, and that's going to show in here. So let me orient everybody here, if I may, before my computer completely crashes. Okay, there we go. So 5 days of supply line, 10 days, 20 days. For all intents and purposes, you can ignore this. This is what we budgeted. We had a completely different set of assumptions than what materialized when we did the budget. And then the other thing you can ignore is anything that happens past April. We're going to change that. We're obviously not going to go negative here. We're going to change our nominations to harvest.
Mm-hmm. And the vertical line is where we're currently at?
The red line is what we're currently...
No, but that vertical dotted line,
yes.
That's current nest today.
Yes, I'm sorry. I got a message from one of our online participants that said that they couldn't see. Okay.
You should be able to see now, right? Can you see the graph?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so the vertical line is today. Don't ignore everything past 4-1. Here is where we are now. So there is a little dip here, and that is subject to change. That is because of a harvest scheduled maintenance. They were going to turn down for 4 days. Because of the work that they've done during this unscheduled maintenance, this will either shift or completely disappear. But we have not yet received a full notification on what will happen here. But as you can see, even with the cold snap, we're pretty much riding this this 20-day line. We're currently comfortable having everybody burning. As George said earlier, the hospital is currently burning and UIF is too. They're currently generating electricity using natural gas. They're not on at the full volume. They're also supplementing with diesel. We'll talk more about the limitations on that and what we plan to do in order to be able to provide them with as much gas as they or as the facility would need in order for gas to be the sole source when it's negative 40 outside. But everybody is on and burning, and we're comfortable with the availability of supply.
They are delivering to us 100,000 gallons per day or thereabouts now, currently?
About 84,000.
84.
Mm-hmm. And they could, the limitation is trailers and drivers, not what the facility can produce. The facility could go up one more trailer to 96,000 gallons currently. Mm-hmm. The facility has not yet had its performance testing, and they need to change some valves, hence the scheduled maintenance, in order for the facility for Cosmodyne to be able to prove to harvest that the facility can do 150. But so far, interrupt me at any point if I'm just speaking out of term here, but so far they can go up to 7 trailers.
And so should we get into why we're one trailer short?
We could. We don't think that we should push it because of our minimum volume commitment. If we were to increase the number of trailers now, then we will have to take a longer complete shutdown. And that's not ideal, both for Middle Fork, right? They have to have extra drivers now and then just no work later. But also for us operationally, because we have to keep North Pole operational and the storage site 1 operational. And they have a lower storage capacity. And so we would have to do transfers between our storage sites, which just adds unnecessary costs.
And so when we have the next finance committee meeting, you'll have changed your nominations and you'll be able to have a chart that shows us above the 20-day line.
Yes.
All the way to the end.
Yes. This dip here back when we did our last nominations, it wasn't projected to be as cold as it turned out to be. We purposely wanted to go down as low as possible because George and his team have some work that they need to do at the big storage and vaporization facility, and for that it would be preferable that tank is sits as low as possible. This is planned to be in June when we barely send anything out.
Thank you.
Other questions? Derek.
So in general, is our aim to always maintain a 20-day supply with the exception of what you just talked about for maintenance? And is that something that is annual, like every year you're going to want to have the supply down to do some of the things that you need to do?
So the only strict requirement that we have in general is to maintain a 5-day supply. That is, though the Regulatory Commission of Alaska does not economically regulate IGU, they did give us the Certificate of Public Convenience and Necessity, the CPCN. And in that, they mentioned that we are required to keep a 5 days worth of supply. Management
I should say we don't like it to go under 20 days. It's a comfort thing, and the Dalton Highway can shut down. We could have all kinds of different potential issues. So we like to keep it at 20 days. The 10 days line is there because should anything happen to the harvest facility, where they would have a prolonged shutdown, and we would be able to demonstrate that we would not be able to maintain a 10 days worth of supply, that's when we're able to get LNG from somewhere else. So that's kind of a contractual line for us to keep track of as we do projections. But generally, we try to stay above the 20 days for comfort and for, you know, good fiduciary responsibility.
Okay. 5-day regulatory, 10-day contractual, 20 days, what we like to see comfort level.
Yes.
Okay.
And no, this is not an annual maintenance procedure that we do. It's something we've identified we're working to take care of. Should be a one-time deal.
All right. Other questions? Okay.
I have a couple of more things, if you don't mind.
Please.
If in front of you there should be a conflict of interest disclosure form, if you haven't already emailed a copy to Erica, please sign one and just leave it at your seat. I'll take it. We need those, please. I mentioned all of this. On Sunday, we had a PHMSA reportable incident. Everybody was safe. At no point did our customers ever feel anything happening. It matched the threshold for us to have to report it to PHMSA. I will talk more about it if the board so desire and give specifics in executive session. But in public session, one thing that I want to mention is that I responded to, along with a lot of other people, everybody in the chain of command did, and I would have loved for members of the board to have been a fly on the wall and during that stressful emergency situation. We have an incredible team. They worked so well together. They worked off of each other. Nobody needed significant direction to act. And I'm talking everybody from the control room operator who was alone at the facility at the time of the incident, to operators who responded, to supervisors, managers, and George. It was all around an all hands on deck situation, and it was great to witness just the brain power and the intelligence and the ability to work together in a helpful manner. And I just want to commend the team. That was Mark Daney and Ethan, Shadrach, Joel, Jeremiah, and George. They did an excellent job. And that concludes my report.
Okay. So, any questions on the latest report? Okay, I'd like to recognize Gary Welkin signed on. I see him up there, smiling face. And Zane's up there. So, good.
Good afternoon.
Go ahead.
Hey, you have my report there. Things have been pretty quiet. We anticipate we're going to be dealing with the harvest issues related to the force majeure claim here over the next. Things are going to be starting to activate there over the next month or so, and that'll lead to a little bit more activity. But things have been all very, very, very slow on the legal front, which is good news.
Okay. Questions to Zane? Thank you, Zane. Okay, let's see. We need to go into executive session.
You have director requests for NGO information next.
Okay, so I need to ask the directors if they have any requests. Okay, let me start with you, Jack.
Not for me, thank you.
Pete? Sherry?
No.
Gary?
No, thank you.
Okay. Derek?
I'm good, thank you.
Okay. And now we move into executive session.
Closing comments.
I'm sorry.
Closing comments.
Oh, okay. So we need to have closing comments for the general meeting. So any from you, Elena?
No, thank you.
Okay. Any from you, Zane?
Sorry, I couldn't reach my mute button there. No, if we're going to move on to executive session, I just need to chat with Elena real quick. We can take a brief recess to chat about that.
Okay, we'll have a right recess before we start the executive session. And now, directors, Derek, closing comments?
No, just appreciate being here and look forward to being a part of this board. Thank you.
Jack?
Welcome, Derek. Glad you're here.
Thanks.
Pete?
No,
Jerry?
No.
Jerry?
None right now. Thank you, Jim.
Okay. Can I get a motion to move into executive session? And before we go to start that meeting, we will have a 5-minute break.
Okay.
So go ahead, please.
So I'd like to move that the board enter into executive session to discuss business development, compliance, and contract matters, which if immediately known would clearly have an adverse effect on IGU's finances, to include the IGU Board of Directors, IGU General Manager Elena Setup, Director of Operations George Deal, and IGU Attorney Zane Wilson.
All right.
And that took care of my concern, Chair, so we're good.
I suggest somebody also makes the first motion that we adjourn this meeting at the adjournment of the executive session.
Say that again.
I suggest that somebody makes a motion that we adjourn our regular meeting upon the adjournment of the executive session.
Okay.
So moved.
Okay. And seconded.
Second.
And seconded. Thank you, Sherry. Okay, with that, we'll take a 5-minute break.
We need to vote on Derek's motion.
Okay, those in favor?
Aye.
Those opposed? Okay, now we'll take a 5-minute break. This job's hard.